Your conference is being recorded.
Hello, everyone. I heard a lot of beeps tonight. Melissa, are you on?
I sure am.
Well, great. Thanks for joining. And Melissa, can you say your last name for me?
Sure. Nini?
Oh, Nini. Okay. Very good. Okay. We'll wait just couple more seconds.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And then we'll get started.
Sounds good.
Okay, we had over 50 registered for tonight's call, so I hope everybody got the handouts that I sent this morning. If not, please email me at FVND, so Frank Victor, North Dakota, at brtel.net.
Okay.
Just in case you didn't get them, so I'll resend them to you.
Okay.
And I want to thank Melissa tonight from the Ann Carlson Center for coming and speaking with us this evening. It's a great partnership that we've had with the Ann Center, and I'm anxious to hear more about the Nurtured Heart curriculum. So, Melissa, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you would like to want questions we go, or if you want to pause somewhere in there, you lead the way, and if you need help, we'll help in any way that we can.
Okay, thank you. So I'll just introduce myself pretty briefly. I want to make sure that I get as much time as possible to go over as much as I can of the approach. It's just an hour, so I'm used to teaching this in like a 12-hour, six-week class. So I'll try not to overwhelm you. But first off, I'll let you know my name is Melissa Nimi. I'm a certified advanced trainer in the Nurtured Heart Approach. I'm a speech-language pathologist, and I did 5 years, my first 5 years, I worked in early intervention at Ann Carlson, and then right now I'm currently the therapy operations manager for their pediatric outpatient therapy services. I live in North Fargo with my husband and 3 kiddos. My middle guy has been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, and he was my inspiration for learning more about how to deal with challenging behaviors. And boy, am I glad that I found this approach. I will tell you who I am not. I am not a parenting expert, and I definitely know that there's a whole lot more to this approach than can be covered in an hour, but I'm going to do my very best. My goal is to finish in about 45 minutes so that we have time to answer questions. And then when asking questions at the end, I would ask that everyone be as general as possible so that the answer might apply to a lot of listeners. So instead of being very specific about a specific kiddo, you might kind of be more general so that other people can see themselves in your answer. I just want to make sure we help as many people as we can understand this approach. So with that, I guess I will just get started, unless there's something else you wanted me to start off with or talk about first.
No, I'm good, Melissa. You have mute on your phone, those that are in the background, so that we don't hear you. So that Melissa can present, please make sure that you mute your lines if you can. Thank you.
Okay. So just a tiny bit of background on the Nurtured Heart Approach. It was created by a guy named Howard Glasser. And as a licensed professional counselor back in the day, he'll say, it was a great surprise to him, you know, that all the training that he had received a lot of times, most often, did not work with the most challenging children. And he observed that so much of that advice that he was taught to give families often just backfired and made things worse. And so what do? When we are coming up against challenges, we just kind of, we try harder, right? But we only have the tools that we have. And so eventually, working with these especially challenging children, he began to kind of remember how he felt. He had, he'll say, quote unquote, a career as a difficult child himself. And so he just started to notice kind of the more subtle ways that the interactions between kids and their parents affected the outcome of their behavior. And so from this experience, the nurtured heart approach was born. And like I said, even though the approach was created with challenging children in mind, parents and teachers and professionals have found that it's just as effective with non-challenging children. And in fact, it's pretty exhausting to try to toggle or switch between, you know, if you have your, if you're in a, like a classroom setting or you have multiple children in your family, to try to approach one kiddo with one set of eyes and then treat the other ones differently. And a lot of times, the non-challenging, we'll say non-challenging children, will often have behavior flare-ups in an effort to get the same kind of relationship that they're seeing happen. So nurtured heart approach is intended for use with all children. See here. Okay, so I'm moving on. If you have the slides, it's the one that's titled, Is Intensity the Enemy? So just thinking about some of the symptoms or how, you know, the describing words of how we would describe kiddos, right, that would be intense. So impulsive, I've heard lots of different, everyone has some great ideas, defiant, difficult, resistant, oppositional, or even just like cranky or argumentative. All these are symptoms, but we're often just lumping them together and seeing that intensity as the enemy. So right now, we don't have a lot, society doesn't have a lot of approaches that truly work with intense kids. So that's one of the reasons we're seeing intensity as a negative thing. But if you really think about it, it takes intensity to accomplish anything in life. If you have challenges, you need to have a certain amount of intensity, drive to accomplish whatever you're coming up against. So many influential individuals in history share the trait of intensity. So we want to channel that intensity in positive ways, and that's what this approach seeks to do. So talking a little bit about improvement versus transformation. So improvement is going to be your data. So I'm thinking, like, as a therapist, I'm putting on my SLP hat. Data is beautiful in the beginning every time you try some new way of, like, bribing or taking something away or a behavior chart. I'm not talking about visual supports, though they're really appropriate for a lot of our kiddos. But some of those things seem to work in the beginning, but there really isn't what the nurtured heart approach calls a transformation. So what we really want and what the approach is designed to do is to awaken children to who they really are as a great person. And so that requires us to be able to be intentional about how we react and especially the timing that we react. So looking at the conventional methods, I would wager, I guess, that this audience has tried many different methods. If you have kids that are inspiring you to learn more about challenging behaviors, the traditional methods essentially were created for the average child and even kind of are limited with that audience. So if I think about my first child, she was the one that pretty much made me have a false sense of success as a parent. So anytime I would tell her no or tell her to do something, I never had to say it twice. She always, that's just how she was. It wasn't until my second child until I realized I knew nothing. So with intense kids, the traditional methods, and I'm sure you've experienced this, they max out. They leave parents and professionals kind of just scratching their heads, wondering what to do. And all we really can do is what we know how to do. So we just amplify the same methods that we have. We might, you know, switch things up or call it something different. But if we're using traditional methods, in essence, the more intense that the child, intensely that these kiddos resist. And it doesn't help the kids, and it doesn't help the situation, and it doesn't help us, because our ultimate goal is for them to be successful and as much as they can. So we basically are often accidentally rewarding negative behavior with all sorts of in all sorts of ways. We'll just say that. We'll get a little bit more into that in a couple more slides. So the main point of the nurtured heart approach is to build inner wealth. So what that means is that kiddos do not need us to remind them eventually. They don't need us to remind them and show them their abilities. They know it about themselves already. So if I think about my oldest or any of my kids, my ultimate goal is for them, when they are in other places, when I'm not around, or maybe they're with someone that they're not quite sure what their limits are or what their rules are, that they're acting to the best of their abilities because that's how they believe themselves to be, versus acting in a way to avoid a punishment or acting in a way to get a reward, something tangible. So that's the ultimate goal. The nurtured heart approach, the title of the approach, throws a lot of people off. It does sound really fluffy. Sometimes people think, oh, it's just about making kids feel good all the time. We'll get into why that's not what it's about. But what it really is about is having that kid's inner voice eventually take over this whole approach. So Howard likes to tell some different stories to kind of illustrate the different stands. So in the nurtured heart approach, there are three stands, and that is intentional. We use the word stand because when we take a stand, we get really clear, right, and precise. So we can't take a stand and then also be wishy-washy. This is a very it's structured, but it's you're able to individualize it to whoever you're working with. So we will start with the very first one, absolutely no. And this story will illustrate why it's important to make sure that we're not energizing negative behavior. So if you think about a kid's most exciting toy, you know, if you walk into the house with a big, I used to say Toys R Us, but we don't have Toys R Us anymore. So if you walk in with a brand new toy, they're not going to ignore you. They're going to drop what they're doing, and they're going to want to see what this toy does. So they're going to explore it. They're going to push all the buttons. They're going to want to know what it has to offer. And some of the features will be exciting, and some of them will be boring. So if you push a button, and it has a ton of bells and whistles, and you push a different button, and it just does nothing, they're not going to really waste their time on the boring feature. They kind of write it off, and they don't go back to it on purpose. So if you think about it, we are the most interesting toy to our kids. Just look at all the different features that we have, the way we move, the way that we can be in proximity, the way that we can use our facial expressions, the way that we can use our tone of voice. We are just very unique, and we have by far the greatest features of any other toy. So we can't really get around the fact that we are our children's most exciting toy. We need to decide how we're going to use that to help support kids in their greatness. So once kids have experienced all of the features of us, it kind of sets a bar for what is possible. What can they get energetically from us? So when things are going right, our good job and our thank you becomes kind of like the boring button. in comparison to, you know, all of the blinking lights and bells and whistles that negativity and noncompliance brings out in us. So a lot of times you'll see this in toddlers. I don't know if you've seen, there's like a funny video on YouTube where there's like a toddler and he's just reaching for a glass of water on our coffee table. Each time he puts his hand towards that glass, you can hear mom in the background saying, no, no. And he just keeps putting his hand out towards it. Now it's a game, and he basically has control over her reactions, like remote control. So he's learning, oh, if I do this, I get a big reaction. It's not necessarily meaningful if it's positive or negative. It's really all about the energy behind it. So it's kind of like, you know, kids want something reliable and consistent as fast as possible. So if you are consistently accidentally giving them the bells and the whistles for negative behavior, that's going to be their go-to in order to get that energy from you. So it's not intentional. When I first went through this, I was like, so they're trying to drive me crazy. That's not the case. It's really quite across the board understandable. If we look at the things that we do with our attention, we don't watch TV that we consider to be boring. We watch TV we consider to be exciting. So it's not crazy to think about it that way. But a lot, once you think about this toy analogy, you'll really see all the ways that we're kind of accidentally giving the bells and whistles. So you are the prize. They're always going to choose more energy, and we just have to find a way to be intentional about how we're using our energy. So it's not about giving them a big old party for when they do something good and then just ignoring them when they're breaking rules. So we'll get to stand three, and we'll talk about clarity and how it's really important, a really important part of the approach. I don't want to give anyone the impression that we just ignore it and that rules don't matter. But we do have to be really careful about how we react, and like I said before, the timing of when we react. Okay, so that should give you kind of an idea as to the first stand. So he says it really well in here. It's a very kind of draw a line in the sand way of saying it. You know, I refuse to energize negativity by accidentally rewarding negativity with my energy, connection, or relationship. And I will be intentional to watch where my energy is flowing. So this is a really awesome kind of self-awareness, because a lot of times our reactions are so automatic that we don't really know that we're accidentally rewarding until you have this information and then you go out into the world and see. You know, if you think about it in terms of adult relationships or relationships with coworkers, you know, we often feed into the negative because that's what we're used to and that's just our automatic go-to. The more intentional we are about how we spend our energy, especially in the parenting world, the less fires we'll have to put out on the other end. And that will make more sense as we get into stand two. So in your slides, there is one that's called Choosing What Not to Energize, and there's a video that I'm unable to show you, obviously, through the phone, but you may have seen it. It's been on, like, America's Funniest Home Videos, where there is a toddler, super cute, in little footy pajamas, and he is having a big old meltdown and crying, and then mom moves out of the room, and he stops crying, picks himself up off the floor, follows mom into the other room, and then falls back down and starts crying again. And this happens like 6 times. And in my mind, when I first saw it, you know, there's a laugh track to it and everything. It actually was kind of distressing. Yes, it's funny because he's trying to get his mom to get attention, right? But when I look at it, I see it as, you know, he's doing something that he's convinced is going to work. And the only way he would do that, only reason he would do that is because it used to work, right? And now mom is choosing not to energize that. But this isn't really an example of nurtured heart approach. It's just a classic example of ignoring behavior. And we're not really informing the kid about, you know, when mom would show back up again, like when is it over? So he just kept going and going. So that will make more sense in a little bit. So the next one that says ignoring is counterproductive. So it might seem like it's the same thing, ignoring and not energizing the negative. But it should be clear after this that they're very different. So ignoring just invites kids, especially our intense kiddos, to up the ante. So as much as we say we are ignoring behavior, there's always a breaking point where we can't take any more, and then we'll step in, usually with all kinds of energy and bells and whistles. And for our intense kids, ignoring is simply an invitation to find out how much escalation is needed to get the reaction. So if we are, you know, ignoring for 2 minutes, and then we give in, they're just learning that, okay, it takes at least 2 minutes. I will try 3 if I have to next time. So he has a great quote that is, ignoring just teaches kids to get better at getting worse. So I love that because it's been my experience, and I'm pretty sure that you guys have been there as well. So ignoring itself is just a passive experience. We're tuning out, we're disassociating from the moment, and then while we're ignoring, we not only miss out on the misbehavior, but then we also miss out on the moments when the misbehavior ceases, like when they're done. So refusing to energize negativity is a very active experience in that pausing your energy flow or your bells or your whistles, the big reactions, and we're just eagerly waiting for the first moment to turn it back on again when things are going right. By doing so, we are informing them of, okay, where do you get the energy from me when things are going right? So though the inappropriate behaviors are noted, you know, it's not like we don't notice them, we're not accidentally rewarding them. So I don't know about you guys, but in my house, Minecraft and Roblox are everything. And to be able to play video games, it seems to be pretty easy for a lot of kids and very motivating. What really bothers a lot of parents, including myself, is that even though a kid, you know, can't focus on his chores or his homework, he can play video games for hours, right? So the kids are super hyper-focused on success. All the kid wants to do is get higher levels or get better weapons or whatever is going on in that particular game in every level, right? So they want to break their record. They're being the best they can. And the question is, why can't kids be like this in real life? The fact is there's a logic underneath the video game that is very compelling to the kids, and they're really drawing them towards successfulness. And we can kind of hack that and really take a look at the energy behind it and make it work in our favor. So if you pick apart, you know, video games themselves, the incentives are immediate and strong and predictable. They're always there. So I'm a Mario World person. So in my Nintendo experience, if you jump in a certain direction, you're going to get the coins. If you go back to the same level on Tuesday, the coins are still there. So it's always predictable. There's tons of opportunities for success. So like coins, bonus lives, points, I don't know why I'm just keep thinking about weapons. Incentives are pretty much everywhere and ready for the taking. So they'll go out of their way to find more success, right? And the game is never in a bad mood. So it's always it's the consistency that makes it so that when there's a consequence for whatever, screwing up or going off the ledge or whatever it is, there's literally so much lack of reaction from the game, it's just like you just start over, right? So it's not punitive. It's not holding it against them when they come back and try again. It's really clear and predictable, and it's, you know, it doesn't ever forget to give the incentive. So if we can kind of look at the way that is motivating to our kids, it's not surprising that we can kind of go along the same lines with how we're approaching them and kind of, you know, channel that intensity that they obviously have capability of into other areas, just to generalize in a therapist term. So moving on a little bit more about the consequences. So we're talking a lot about video games, but I feel like it's really important, and I feel like it's an analogy that a lot of people understand. So if a kid breaks a rule, even a little bit, the game delivers a consequence every single time. So it doesn't feel sorry for the child. It just delivers the consequence, and it's immediate, and I like using the word unceremonious. So it's just like a black screen, or they go back to their, I know some of you would understand, spawn point. Whatever the last thing that they accomplished, they have to start over and do it again. They don't really seem to be super bothered by that. They're just excited for the challenge to do better next time. We want that for them in real life, right? So because of how awesomely fun the game is, they can't wait to get back in the game. So really what we want is it to be, you know, to be carried over into real life like that. So hopefully that gave you an understanding of stance one, refusing to energize negativity. And I would challenge you to kind of think about how that would apply in your adult relationships as well. And then another whole layer of it is, how do we approach ourselves and our level of self-care as parents? I think it's really important to not necessarily let the negativity take up all of our mental real estate, right? So if we're always kind of trying to be as best as we can in whatever role that we are in, we're often not thinking about our successes when we're trying to fall asleep at night, right? So we're kind of automatically thinking about, oh, maybe I should have said it this way, or I forgot to do that one thing, and we're kind of in that habit. So hopefully after this, you might be able to recognize when you're kind of energizing your own negativity and find other ways to channel that insight that you have. So we'll move on to stand two. It's the opposite of stand one. So it's pretty easy to remember. So if you're in the middle of some intense situation, stand one, absolutely no. Stand two, absolutely yes. Stand three, absolutely clear. So with stand two, we are relentlessly creating and energizing positivity and success. So we energize and nurture firsthand experiences of success. And so firsthand is a really important aspect for this stand and what we're going to be talking about the next few minutes. So we've established where we don't want the energy to flow. And we need to be able to key into where we do want energy to flow, and even at more heightened levels than we have before. So absolutely yes is showing up in big ways, exciting ways, when things are going right. So in parenting, so I'm looking at the slide that says new ways of being positive. So in parenting, and a lot of like the education literature, or even if you just go on Pinterest, there's all sorts of things that are designed to, quote, catch them being good. So this is a great kind of starter point if you're trying to be more positive. But in Nurture Heart Approach, we don't wait and hope for kids to be good and worthy enough of attention. So there's two issues with catching kids being good in its most basic sense. So we're just so good at seeing what's wrong with the picture. And then on the other side of it, our language, you know, our language of failure is so strong. We can describe what is wrong with the situation with so much vibrancy, with so much creativity, with so much detail, that in order to reach our current status of what we would consider good, we might be waiting a long time. Our language of success is pretty skimpy, and our standards of what qualifies as good tend to be ambiguous depending on the situation or who the kiddo is with. We seem to have the wrong tool. So what we need to find are new ways of being positive. So good job, way to go, that kind of praise is not sufficient, at least according to the nurtured heart approach. It's kind of like junk food. It feels, tastes good in the moment, but it doesn't have any nutritional value. It's kind of empty communication. So ways that provide exceptional emotional and psychological nutrition, and that's a very Howard way of saying, you know, give them something that sticks, something that's going to be something that they can actually hold on to. So if we're going to go to the trouble or spend all of this energy in trying to be positive, we need to do it in a way that'll actually land. So a lot of our kids have an idea of themselves that might be negative, right? So if all of a sudden we're cheering them on for being responsible, but they haven't really heard about themselves being responsible before, a lot of kids will just shy away from that. They'll tell you to be quiet. They'll say, no, I'm not. So what we need to do is find firsthand experiences that they can experience being whatever value that you're trying to teach. So we don't want empty praise. You know, most teachers and parents have already tried it, and they haven't really seen a lot of impact. So the intention of Nurtured Heart Approach, however, is not to, quote, make a child feel good. The intention is to speaking truths to them and showing them, is kind of like holding up a mirror, that build that inner wealth. Eventually they will internalize it, that is the hope, and they will go out into the world and other scenarios and be able to make choices from that place. So for example, you know, we do it in ways called recognitions in the Nurtured Heart Approach, and I'm not going to go into all the different kinds of recognition, but essentially it boils down to noticing something, saying it out loud, and then possibly saying what it means about them. So, for example, I noticed that Deneen was very responsive to my many questions leading up to this call, which really shows her willingness to collaborate and her excellent coordinating skills, right? So that sounds very wordy, but if you start doing this, it will become more natural, and you will be able to find ways to recognize them in moments of success that you wouldn't have necessarily noticed before. Okay, so here's another video I won't be able to show you. It is from a school in North Carolina, and they are like 95% trained in Nurtured Heart Approach. And they're here, we're basically seeing her praise the child, you know, for working well as a teammate. And then she's actually bringing up what they could be doing, but they're not. So that's another way of recognizing kiddos, is when a rule is not being broken, you can recognize that. You don't have to wait for some awesome, amazing thing to happen. It can just be, you know, I noticed that you were anxious about coming to therapy today, but you didn't run away and you didn't hide in the bathroom. That really means that, you know, you have an open mind today. I really appreciate you being flexible. So that could just be the kid sitting in the car. And they might just be like, that's not what I was trying to do. But you're providing them with evidence. They can't argue with it because it's them doing something. We don't want to, in nurtured heart approach, at least the idea is we want to be able to show them something they can't argue with, and then eventually over time they'll have that idea of themselves. So recognitions, like I said before, comes down to what's happening or what's not happening, and then what does it say about who they are. So this, you can do this with coworkers at work, and I think the Minnesota North Dakota NICE makes it a little bit hard for us to want to give really like powerful, authentic recognitions to other people, because we know that it would make us feel weird. Gunning probably felt weird when I called her out for being so awesome, because we're not used to it. And in fact, I know I feel more comfortable praising somebody's cute purse than their work ethic. So part of this is really kind of changing your mindset about how you're going to basically call people out on their greatness. Okay, so we're going to move into the third stand, and hopefully you're still with me here. Building the foundation. So we can't move into the third stand. Like, the nurtured heart approach can't work if you're just going to take the third stand. So like building a house, we got to have that foundation. If we don't have this first and second stand in place, the limit setting can't be effective. So that's really important to note. We want to make sure that they have that time in. He calls it time in, right? That is really making that child not want to miss out on it. So if you're thinking about a timeout or whatever you want to call it, we want them to not want that, right? But if it's not a positive experience when they're not breaking rules, then what's the motivation to follow the rules? So the first two stands of absolutely no and absolutely yes are kind of like prerequisites to being able to use the last stand. So stand three then being absolutely clear. So, you know, thinking again about that video game analogy, the game will always play hardball with the rules and always delivers a consequence each and every time, consistently. So here, it's like, here are the rules. Here's what happens when you choose to break a rule. So I set and enforce clear limits and clear consequences in an unenergized way. That unenergized is a really important part of it. And I will always provide a true consequence, again, referencing the video game logic. So, time out. I recently just did a training for an entire staff of daycare. So this was a really kind of fun conversation to have and see how creative we can get with time out. So if you think about any kind of consequence that we have presented, we have essentially, it boils down to a timeout. So if they are missing out on something that they...
Melissa, can whoever mute your line, please? Thank you.
Okay. I'll give it another go. So when we're giving a timeout, let's just think of like the most common timeout. Generally, we're giving a ton of energy and relationship before, during, and after the timeout. So if we haven't yet set up that, you know, success and the time in, a timeout can't really work, like I said, because they're not missing out on what they truly want, and that's that connectedness with you, their favorite toy, right? So rules of basketball. I'm not a huge fan of sports analogies, but this one makes a lot of sense to me. So the rules are clear. You know, if everyone showed up to play basketball and the, you know, the boundary lines were all fuzzy and all over the place and missing in some places, it would just make chaos in the game, right? We need to be the out of bounds and be very clear about what is what. So a toe over the line is out of bounds. In the same way, a little bit of swearing is swearing. A little bit of hitting is hitting. So we are enforcing them with consistency, but the beauty of the Nurtured Heart approach is that it's easy to do and for parents and the kids, and it really makes it so that they want to get back in the game. So when it's not a big, huge, punitive consequence that just kind of tends to build more and more consequence as they're responding to the consequence, we're kind of flipping that in that the consequence in the Nurtured Heart approach, it's called a reset. This particular training is going to go in depth as to that process. Just know there's lots of trainings and books and different things that would be able to support in learning kind of like the next level of things. But the essence behind it is that they know they do not have to be perfect, which is huge. It's a huge relief for a lot of our intense kids too, because a lot of them have ideas about being perfect, and if it's impossible, then they're feeling defeated and then they give up. So this approach gives them room to not worry about being perfect, but to aspire to, you know, get back in the game and try again. So we essentially now have a way of saying, it's okay if you break a rule, and here's what happens if you do. Meanwhile, I'll keep applauding you when you don't break the rules. So it's always doable, and it's not a big deal. The bigger the deal we make of it, the more energy we put behind it, the less effective it's really going to be in changing behavior, especially in our intense kids. So now we have the little quote slide that I really like. It children do not awaken by the fear of punishment. They awaken to their greatness. So, you know, we all have these high hopes for our kids, and I feel like incorporating some elements of these stands can only help. So, you know, like I said, in longer courses, there's a strategy called a reset. I personally feel like I use resets with myself more than I do with my kids. And so the focus is not to provide like a giant punishment, but to provide that opportunity for the child to manage themselves, self-regulate, and then jump back into the game. Okay. So through Nurtured Heart approach, the focus of where energy is being delivered and where it's not being delivered has a new level of clarity. So instead of looking for the perfect punishment that's going to cause the child to never break a rule again, Nurtured Heart approach provides a quick consequence every time a rule is broken with very little energy. And then the payoff the child receives is where your energy is being spent on that front end when things are going right. So that is maybe, you know, inspiring more questions than answers, because I know it's a lot of information and it seems a little bit counterintuitive. But when I think about it, I think about, you know, my conventional ways weren't working. So it was worth a shot to try something new. And it turned out being very positive for our family. So I really hope that you got something out of this, and I am so proud of myself. I was able to leave some time for questions. So I would love to hear questions that you guys have.
Well, this was sure great, Melissa. One question that I have is, do you have a schedule of trainings that you're doing regarding Nurtured Heart, or?
That is in the works. I have done them sort of quarterly, and then I had changed roles and things got really crazy. So I don't have anything on the books for now, but the hope is to get back to doing them quarterly, open to the public, and then as a kind of an added bonus for families that have Ann Carlson services. But then internally as well, Ann Carlson staff, a lot of our staff was trained, in fact, our doctor on the Jamestown campus, Dr. Myra, she is a nurtured heart approach trainer as well. So she, we're kind of embedded in the culture a little bit. But no, I don't have anything specific, but, you know, if I could share like a link with you in the future when I have something set up, I'd be happy to do that.
That would be great. I would appreciate that. And I think, you know, and if there's opportunities even, you know, for families that may not be utilizing the Ann Center at this time, if there's an opportunity for them to come to a training too, that would be good, I think.
Yep. That's my goal, is to get as many, say, tuckuses in the seats. So we have, since we're a nonprofit, we get to have access to the Alex Stern family room in the Dakota Medical Foundation building, and it's a beautiful room. It fits about 30 people, and so I'd love to be able to, you know, fill that up at least quarterly, and that's kind of a, you know, if we can make it happen, I'd be really happy about it.
Mm-hmm. That is a nice room, a really nice room.
It is.
I have a question. I don't seem to have received the slides, so where would I go to get that?
Who was that?
This is Victoria.
Your last name?
Zach.
I will send them to you, Victoria.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
Yep, I have one. My name is Georgiana. I have three kiddos, and we're having the most significant behavior issues with our oldest. However, we're also getting a little bit of monkey see, monkey do with the youngest. So what's the best way to implement it? Do I kind of start it with the one that's having the most behaviors and have it trickle down, or do I just try to approach it to everybody across the board? Because to be honest, my oldest right now takes a whole lot of energy, and and I'm wondering, you know, what's the best way to just kind of implement this as a new thing to try?
That's such a great question. I feel like, personally, it's easier to do it more as a blanket approach, just because having to focus on changing your reaction and being proactive with those recognitions, it's just the more you do it, the easier it is. So with the youngest one, especially, I'm thinking, it's almost the opposite. So if you were to recognize when the youngest isn't breaking a rule or isn't doing that new behavior that they're seeing the older one do, you could be very vocal about how you see them making a better choice. That might inspire the older one, maybe not, but it would give them that firsthand experience of, oh, I get more from mom when I do X, Y, Z, or when I don't, you know? So I personally, it's a personal choice, but I feel like the, you know, we're not going to be perfect at this for sure right out of the gate, but as, you know, as long as you're just trying out different things anyway, you might as well just try it, you know, across the board. That would be my advice there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Don't be shy. Any other questions for Melissa? Victoria, I just sent the slides to you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Andrea.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi. I had a question. Well, I guess a question about the final slide on the presentation mentions the free video e-course. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. What it is, and I'm sure you've kind of run into these on the internet when you kind of sign up for a newsletter or you sign up for a site of some sort, where if you go to Children's Success Foundation, you can sign up for their email free video e-course, and you'll get like a little snippet. I think it's 10 days of like a 10-minute video or even less. I'm not quite sure. And it's the same material that goes over the 1 hour. So I would recommend anybody sign up for that, because it's going to be, you know, more of the same, but from a different teacher. So I feel like that's just going to help things land a little bit more. I know on the website in the past, they've had more in-depth online trainings that you can pay for. And I know that there are some local trainers as well that are offering courses and even like coaching in this approach specifically. But I don't even know the name, like I know their individual names, but I don't know the name of like their group, I guess, that is doing it. So, there are opportunities, and actually Fargo-Moorhead has a really high, number of trainers, like nationally speaking. We're sick in the nurtured heart approach up here. You are welcome to do that e-course. And it might just have you, you know, you might end up on a newsletter that you could also opt out of later.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, my name is Gina. I'm an occupational therapist. My general question is, what is your suggestions for a child that comes into session, walks into the room, and breaks into tears? And we just can't get them to engage in anything functional. We aren't the most exciting toy in the room.
You are not. There's always, you know, some kid that's going to be responding differently than you can figure out. So I love my OTs, by the way. So I don't feel like I would have enough information to make a for sure call on it. But if you're in a session and we're emotionally dysregulated, there really isn't a whole lot of learning that the client can do. That's just my understanding of how the brain works, is we're not in learning mode when we're in fight or flight. So my recommendation, just kind of as a therapist, would be to help either parents or other therapists or other caregivers recognize attempts at doing things that maybe are uncomfortable. You know, obviously, I don't know enough about the kiddo to say for sure, but if we have like emotionally intense kiddos, it's important, I believe, just from my developmental training, to not see like crying or big feelings, like I like to call it, as something that needs to be like distinguished or behaviorally approached in such a way that it's like something that we don't want, or we don't want them to have the idea that they're not allowed to feel their feelings either. So it would be difficult for me to determine, is he doing it because in the past it's gotten him out of doing things that are hard, or is he really just super, you know, distressed at the idea of doing things that they consider hard? There's all sorts of ways you can go with that, but I hope that helps just a little bit at least.
No, that's actually super helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank Any other thoughts or comments at all? Melissa, any closing remarks?
No, just thank you for having me, and I enjoy any opportunity to talk about this stuff. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you did great. I learned a lot tonight, actually. You know, now with my, I had, they're now adults, had two with special needs, but now I've got little grandchildren, so it's nice to learn a new approach when they're testing your will.
Oh, yeah. And they all kind of do it a little differently, too, so.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you again, Melissa, for joining us tonight, and all of you for coming on the call. We are going to have, where's my slip? There is another call coming up on the 19th of March on handling puberty, and that is with Kathy Harstead from Minot State. And then on the 26th, we'll have somebody from Gillette Children's Hospital. And then on the 31st, we have dispute resolution with Mark Ehrmantraut from the Department of Public Instruction. And then that's into April. So watch our e-news and announcements for those. And Melissa, if something comes up, let us know, and we'll certainly get that word out for you.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining tonight.
Have a good night.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.